You are not to discuss this matter amongst yourselves.
We don't submit reports or ask approval for specific operations, if that's what you mean. We are an autonomous department.
Any questions?
Broadcasting from an abandoned subspace relay orbiting Risa, this is Section 31, gathering intelligence for you on Star Trek CCG. Now reporting in, operatives Dan and Rogue.
Welcome to Section 31, Episode 120. I'm Dan Hammond.
And I'm Rogue Schindler.
This week, our post-Gen Con recap.
Yes, that is true.
We went very long last time.
Yes, we did. And, there was more actual Gen Con to cover that was more important. And it gave time to build anticipation and see if those prospective set list type people might want to have gone in and done their own math to see how they did before we released the official results of the second annual. Did we do this last year?
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, was it Worlds we did that, or was it another event? The second annual Fantasy Star Trek CCG Worlds Latinum Draft League thing. We should probably come up with an official name for that if we're going
to
do it.
We should. Right now it's just World's Affiliation Draft, but it needs to have a catchy title. If you have a catchy title, please send an email to section31@danhammond.com. However, the results. Shall we just go through what each affiliation did? Or do you want to pause on that and jump to the other review that we have?
Well, we can, yeah. Let's build that up. Because that was a Gen Con thing, too, kind of. I know a lot of people played it at Gen Con. You played it at Continentals. I did not play it until last week, the week after Gen Con.
That's right. After, as one of the prizes for Continentals, for the 1E Championship here in San Diego, Jeremy Commander had donated special prizes for folks who were playing in his special format, which was... I guess newbie only, which means only pack, Premier Alternate Universe Q Continuum, only printable cards, and only cards from like the OTSD or the two-player game or something like that. It turned out that two of us played in that format, Thomas V and I, and he edged me out in our game. I'm saying edged me out as in I think he thoroughly destroyed me. And I didn't win any other game, so he won. He won first pick, and he picked the $50 prize, and I took the second prize, which was the Star Trek Expeditions, which is the cooperative kind of minis kind of board game kind of thing.
Well, it's a Clicks game because it's from WizKids, mm-hmm. The makers of Heroes Clicks and assorted other clicky type games, not with a Q, with a CK, or just a K, right. I guess, depending on who you ask. And so there are a handful of little Clicks figures with it, but it's really more of a board game, cooperative strategy type game.
Yeah. I think the first type of game I was introduced to in this kind of genre was Arkham Horror.
Yes.
Whereas we're all characters running around on the board. We all have some special power that breaks the rules, kind of, and we're all playing against the clock, pretty much. After a certain number of turns, bad things happen, and we need to do what we need to do before that happens.
So then this is a Star Trek, not just a Star Trek version of that, but the first game, really, or anything that I've seen that was not just a Star Trek property, but the 2009 movie property.
Yeah, so the main characters are all patterned after, I guess, senior bridge crew, maybe? Kirk, Spock, McCoy, and Uhura.
Right, and it's, I glanced at it at Origins, and I was kind of like, my passing opinion, just glancing at it, was, they paid for this license to get this, and I went through and looked at people playing, and I did not see, other than their pictures on the cover, I didn't see anything that otherwise indicated that it was that particular license. I mean, the Clicks are Star Trek-y guys in uniforms. You couldn't really tell them one apart. The Enterprise is kind of, you can kind of tell that it's that Enterprise.
But I was the imagery on the board is, and all the back card backs is the new Enterprise, and you know the Enterprise warping through space. But you're right, it could be, any Star Trek license, really.
Yeah, I didn't find that it was. I was kind of surprised at the price tag associated with it. They must have paid a lot to get that license, to have so little of that integrated into the game. Granted, that doesn't really say anything about its gameplay. I certainly had a good time when we played it last week, and was surprised to I found more than I did in just a passing at a convention. A lot of the cards actually have, their little character cards for each character that have those movie images on them of each character. And
well, I'll tell you how little it has to do with the property. Someone on, I think it's Board Game Geek, created a set of cards for the main characters, because you have your little main character card that sits in front of you with the original TOS people on it. Because really, the clicks looking at them, Uhura looks like Uhura. There you go.
Sure, sure.
It doesn't look like the 60s Uhura.
That is very true. The cut of her jib, as it were, or her uniform, rather, is very new Uhura rather than old Uhura. Yeah. But other than that,
I like the minis that they made. In fact, compared to the other minis game, the little Starfleet Battle lookalike game that they have, these minis are a lot nicer. These are painted. It's very, very finely detailed. And they have clicks as well. So there's two ships. There's the Enterprise and there's the Klingons that kind of battle you in space throughout. And you've got to kind of balance what you're doing on the ground with your ship getting attacked.
Yeah. So the four main characters, it's a four-player game, up to four players.
It's actually one through four players, so
could
play it solitaire if you are so inclined.
Yeah, I could see that. That'd be weird, but sure. It's Kirk and Spock and McCoy and Uhura, as you say, and they each have, a click to go somewhere on the board, and they each have three stats on the click, on the clicks, which is gold, blue, and red, the classic uniform colors, and those are command, the operations, engineering, and security, and then analysis or science or something. Science, which covers science and medical.
Yep.
So they each have default values for those, and of course, as you take wounds, you click your little hero clicks down, and your stats go down as you get injured. But there are support personnel that come in and you can play cards, and you kind of have to, like I said, it's a cooperative game, so you have to see what other people are going to be doing. There's a storyline which is kind of fixed.
It's kind of choose your own adventure-y, if that makes sense.
It is. That does make sense. And so you could play it a few times and get different results, but the basic story is the same. That's actually a really good description. It's like playing the same Choose Your Own Adventure book several times and trying to get different outcomes.
Yeah, the way it works is you follow three story paths, and your objective is to get them all to their end in the best possible way, but they don't have anything to do with each other. So if you're playing multiplayer, you have one guy who's good at one path, and then there may be a challenge in that path that another guy's good at, so you swap over and jump around. And some of them are time-related, so you have to do them before a certain day passes, a certain star date passes. And your score at the end is based on a combination of all three of them. So if you focus and concentrate on just one of them and the other two start to lag, you'll be in trouble.
Yeah. So given that, there's a random assortment. You're on the ship in orbit. The basic story is that there's a planet that wants to join the Federation, so they send the Enterprise, and the Enterprise gets there, and they're like, "Oh, never mind, we're good."
That's right.
And you're like, "Well, what's that about?" So you have to investigate, figure out what's going on. And there's a politics track and an energy/ecology track. The game can't seem quite to decide what. It refers to the same track by multiple names, and then is it a Rebels track?
Yes, the Rebels.
And so there are like 16 zones or something on the planet, and you beam down to them at random, and you flip over the card. It's kind of like playing Star Trek you know, go down to find, is there a dilemma here, or is there actually a mission here? And then if you find the mission, then you can actually flip over the mission cards, which are on the side, and find out what's supposed to happen. And the choose your own adventure part is, if you can do it with a certain level of, you know, imagine doing a mission in Star Trek, but if you had more attribute requirements than required, then you did it really, really well, and you got a bonus. So just passing it is not enough to cut. And so if you do it really well, then you take the A track, and if you do it really, you know, not quite as well, you take the B track. And
yes,
that's how it chooses your own adventure. And then once those branches split, then each of those has an A and a B, or an AB and a C. And there are three tracks, so that comes out to like a dozen different choices or some such, any combination of which you could get in a game. So despite there just being the one plot, you could still play it and have a number of different outcomes. Not to mention, I almost forgot, there's the, so to determine time passage and how many actions you get on a game, on a turn, there's a turn deck. Is it Stardate? Is it the Captain's Log? Is that what it is?
It's the Stardate deck, yeah.
And that tells you how many actions you get on your turn, and they're shuffled and random, so each person takes their turn and gets that. And those have three different tracks as well, so depending on which difficulty you want to do it. So there's a lot of variety. I don't know. I certainly... You've played it more than I have. I've only played it the once, so you guys kind of pulled me along. How many times have you played it now?
I played it once, and then I watched you guys play once. So I think there's enough replayability here to probably go through it about five or six times. And at that point, we'll probably... I don't want to say know what to do, but the various tracks will probably have a strategy to do each one, and there's only so many other random cards that can happen in a game. You shuffle up the 12 track cards, and then you shuffle in a certain number of the extra cards to go in it, and that's the kind of the randomization.
Right.
You know, some good, some bad. So at some point, it's going to get a little repetitious. But there seems to be just an infinite number of expansions that they could do with this. They could put another personnel or two that has different power. The board, when you make the board, the top half is where the ship fights with the Klingons, and the bottom half is just this big, I don't know, how many squares are here? 15, 20 squares? And it's just random. You just put random cards everywhere. So it's kind of this this two-dimensional grid that you can't really walk around directly on because the shapes aren't really squares or anything. But I mean, you can imagine if we get a different mission set, you know, we could be any other planet, really. You could just make anything up, right?
Yeah, I mean, and we kind of mentioned that as we were playing that, you know, with a little bit of analysis of the numbers game involved, you could pretty much write your own plots mm-hmm. to these and throw them in and, you know, at least change things up a little bit for how to play that might make it a little less stale after the, you know, after half a dozen go-rounds. And I mean, I have to assume that WizKids has some kind of designs on that. If sales go well enough, you wouldn't have to repackage the whole game. You could just come out with mission packs or a couple mm-hmm. extra character expansions. You could even have expand it to six players and make the missions a little harder.
Yeah, I could see them doing it Dominion style, where there's, you know, a little half size box that comes with two additional minis, maybe a Sulu and a Scotty or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's your other mission pack. Here's a few Energize cards to throw in, which are the action cards. Here's a few Starbase cards to throw in. As long as they, you know, match everything, yeah, sky's the limit, right?
Yeah, I definitely think it's got potential.
I would say I had a good time playing it and watching you guys play. I'm looking forward to trying it again. We've played it on the easiest difficulty twice. The first time, we barely edged out a win, and we cheated a lot because we were kind of getting the rules as we played. one of the things that we learned after the first game was over was that Energize deck does not get reshuffled. So once you go through it and you use all those cool powers, it's done, and then you're kind of out of luck.
Well, and the other thing I remembered you guys going, when we started my game was you're only allowed to beam once per turn.
Right.
So if you have four actions and you want to get to the other side of the planet, you can't take two of your actions to beam up and then beam back down.
Exactly.
You actually have to walk across the planet, or you have to take two turns beaming. I had a good enough time. I would certainly play it again. I think that if I had demoed this at a convention, I don't think I would have bought it.
No, I agree. I'm not much for being the guy who goes and gets the games, but one in a tournament, looking forward to playing it again, especially at a higher difficulty level.
Sure, absolutely. This game was worth every dollar you spent on it.
I don't know if it was worth as many losses as I took. You get it. good prize. I'm looking forward to, like I said, I'm looking forward to trying it again. And if an expansion comes out that's, $20, maybe $30, I think I might. I could see myself picking it up to expand the game, especially if, we all get together and we play it a few more times. Four players makes it rough because, we usually get more than four people out for a games night. So
yeah,
we had one person watching.
That's true. I mean, we played it because it was a night where we don't, several people couldn't show up, and so we didn't have enough for our usual role-playing. So we did play. And even then, it was five of us, so you had to sit and watch.
I had the girl to take care of, so that was no problem. But like you said, I'm looking for... What was it? Was it the first Dominion expansion that made it playable with six players?
Yes.
I could totally see them doing the same thing.
I agree. I think they would have to look at that right away. Anyhow, if there are those of you who are interested and wanted to explore that, had seen that, hopefully this review is helpful to you. If you really enjoy playing a cooperative Star Trek style game, then this might actually interest you, or you might want to get your group together and maybe you can all chip in together and do it that way.
That would be the way to go, certainly.
Yeah.
What is the retail cost? It's probably around 50 or so, right?
That's what I think I heard. What's it called? Star Trek?
Star Trek Expeditions.
Let's find out.
Yeah. So, again, if you've got a regular play group, it's not something that I would want to throw at a casual group and just try it once and then put on the shelf. It's something that I would really hit, and then it's something that you can replay a few times and then get in the group and then try the higher difficulties.
I definitely felt like I had more fun because you guys already knew what we were doing.
And it's each character has their own advantages and disadvantages, their strong points. So
right.
I think Uhura is kind of rough because her main ability is to give other people cards.
She's the cleric.
Sure. So she's got a pretty good high command and and she's got stealth. So, she can do things, and things will come up that she does well.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I felt like she's the person that stays in the ship and shoots at the Klingons and draws cards and gives them to everyone else.
Yeah.
But, you gotta have in the party, so maybe if it were a three-player game and you didn't have her, you'd miss her.
I definitely felt like you needed Scotty more than you needed Uhura. I kind of felt like I'm gonna get lynched now, but I kind of felt like they did that. They did the same thing when the movie came out. It's like, okay, we're gonna make Uhura main character because we don't have any females, and that's great. I think it was great that she was a stronger, more present character in the movie, but her role in the bridge crew remains the same, and her role in the game kind of reflected that. There were lots of half a third of the track is, we need operations, and nobody had that. You had Scotty and Uhura, or you had Kirk and Spock and McCoy all doing command and science, and Uhura sitting on the ship, and we're like, where's Scotty? We need Scotty.
Yeah, and really, I after two games, playing in one and watching the other, I still have no idea what to do about the ship combat. Part of the game is there's Klingons in orbit. The Enterprise can fall back or take damage and shoot back in long range. And both ships have clicks, I feel like it's so stacked against the Enterprise, there's no advantage to initiating an attack.
Maybe Uhura does need to take the center chair. I mean, you could send her down. There are those couple of chips that, attach directly to the Enterprise, which if we had realized earlier on would have been nice. You could just send her down, grab those, bring them back up, and try to beef up the ship right away.
And then take some shots from long range when it's harder for the Klingons to hit the Enterprise. Yeah, that might be interesting.
Yeah. That might keep them from...
Hey, did you find a cost?
I did. It's looks like 45-ish is the average retail price, but there are lots of places that have it for like 35.
Well, I'll say that the board is very well put together. The minis, the little clicks, are very well done. I think the cards are a little flimsy. I feel like I need to put them in sleeves.
You know what? But if we were talking about that after you left, they're a little flimsy. They feel flimsy, but they don't crease. Like they're not paper. They're some kind of cloth hybrid. They're built to withstand that sort of thing. So that's something. Yeah, here it is. Right. Amazon is retail $50. Their price is $36.88. So.
All right. Well, that's actually not bad if you go in four ways.
Yeah, $9
each. We'll see what the expansion comes out as.
So. Yeah.
Very good.
Star Trek Expeditions. A review.
Like as a book report.
I know.
All right.
Well, shall we move on to the second part of our show?
Yes, let's.
All right. We had a contest.
100 bars of Latinum.
That's right. And all of us spent it, although some of us probably spent more than we should have and artificially inflated the cost of the last few affiliations. We probably ought not do that next time, but it was interesting.
I don't know how artificial it was, as it turns out.
Well, yeah. Let's go through the list. Chris Loban, is it Malloway's?
Yes.
Cause
something like that.
I want to say Milloway's, and I know that's wrong.
Malloway's?
Yeah.
One of these days, we got to ask him what that's supposed to be and what it means.
You know what it's not? It's not from the restaurant at the end of the universe.
Okay.
I won't say it's Norse mythology, but because I asked him once, and he told me, and then I probably forgot. Anyway, he did some calculations for us. What he did was to break down each affiliation and calculate how much each one would be worth based on how many victory points it gained, averaged out. Right?
Yeah.
So, for instance, the Bajorans. Bajorans scored 19 victory points over the course of the tournament, and they would have been around $8 if they were averaged. We actually... bought the Bajorans, you remember?
Brad got the Bajorans for six.
He got a good deal. Yeah. So he got a good deal. Not bad. 19 victory points. The Borg, we estimated to be worth 40, and they scored 120 victory points.
Woohoo!
They were actually worth as much as 55, so that's a pretty good deal. Was that you?
That was me. And, yeah, I think that benefited from being early in the... Or early in the order, early in the alphabet.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah, we talked about randomizing next year, and yeah. I think we were all a little quick on the. Not quick. What's the opposite of quick?
Slow to spend the money.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's exactly, but there's and we said, the bottom of the order is really hefty, but the Borg, how can you not spend a bunch on the Borg? And it paid off.
The Cardassians were estimated we paid 20. They were actually worth 23, so that's another good one.
Good
Dominion,
for you.
Dominion, dead on. We bid $5. It was worth $5.
That's a wash for Charlie.
Yeah. DS9 was another pretty good. Paid 21. They were worth about 20, so not bad. DS9 Earth paid 16. They were worth 36, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, they were in a lot of... how we said there were a lot of dual decks that had DS9 in them as a second headquarters. Unfortunately, the next one that we also thought would be that way, not so much.
Yeah. Ferengi didn't show up at all.
In fact, I think it's the only headquarters that got no play.
Yeah, that's too bad. I brought a Ferengi deck with me, but couldn't pull the trigger on it.
Well,
someone paid $22 for it, and it was worth a big fat zero. Yeah, so
I think that was Charlie's big loss.
Yeah. Klingons, right on. Somebody paid $55. Was that?
That was Brad. That,
Brad, yeah, they were worth $51. That's still pretty close at that high level. Maquis got someone who got Maquis for $3.
Charlie got Maquis for $3, and it was possibly the best deal of the day.
Yeah, it was worth 12, so four times what he paid for it.
He can thank was it Jeff for that, who played Maquis in day two and took it all the way to the finals.
Didn't lose, right?
That's right. He did not lose all day.
A lot of victory points.
Oh man, that's rough.
Let's see. Romulans we overpaid a little bit for, 28. They were only worth 24. Starfleet, same. We paid 18 and they were only worth 11. Terek Nor, pretty good. Pay 17. That's exactly what they were worth.
Woohoo! I'm glad I took my Terek Nor deck then.
Yeah.
Got myself some points.
The last three were the ones that we overbid on because we were using up the last of our cash. But TNG was worth 45. And 44 would have been the minimum bid to buy it.
That's
so
right.
That's actually
pretty
big.
Not the minimum. It would have been the minimum bid for you to bid enough that we couldn't have stood up to against you because we had 43 and 42 respectively.
So I paid 64, so that was a little over. But I think it's interesting that the bidding ended up where it should be, right?
Yeah.
TOS paid 43 was. End up being worth 39, and Voyager was probably. Well, wait a minute. This one we didn't actually overpay for. It was the last one up. Was it you or Charlie?
No, that was Charlie. He was gonna just bid nothing on it, and then
he
was gonna bid like two or something, and then he's like, no, make people pay for paying, getting Voyager.
Right. And so then, he bid 42,
which
it was actually worth. A little bit more than that.
Yeah, it was everything he had left, and it still was not enough,
right,
to meet demand. So it's a good thing we did that.
Overall, total victory points in each of our stables. Charlie racked up 194 victory points. Unfortunately, only one person, including the people who bid on the boards, finished lower than him at 178, and that was Chompers. Sorry, Chompers. So after coming in first place last year, Charlie kind of brought up the rear here.
Yeah, not so big with your secret undercover inside knowledge now.
Yeah, well, there was a new expansion coming out, huh?
Well, there was. They just didn't get to use it this time.
Brad picked up 200 victory points, a few more than Charlie. A few less than me at 228, and the grand champion of the four of us with 243 victory points, edging me out by less than 20, is Sir Rogue.
Yay!
So congratulations. You have won the world championship drafting championship draft.
So we basically flipped from last year.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I was totally in the basement.
You know who did it?
Brad.
Brad. Brad!
It's that fourth player. Well, that means we have to bring in number five next year. And
yes.
Really make people pay. Make it tough.
We invited everyone on the boards to play along at home. And since you have the hindsight of knowing what everything costs and how to bid exactly 100, scores were a little higher than ours. Overall, Red Dwarf, 309 victory points.
So he completely blew me away.
Not only that, he hit upon the optimal entry, the highest score possible in the contest. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and he spent like every last dime.
Every last slip.
Yeah, every bar strip and slip. Yeah, well, and he got really good deals, as we said. He went with Borg for 40. That was his only really big purchase. Romulan, which I think might have been a little bit of an overpay, but then he got DS9 for 16, all the bargains. DS9 for 16, Dominion for 5, Maquis for 3, Bajoran for 6. He spent 98 bars and got all the bargain deals.
Awesome. Well, we will be sending the standard Section 31 prize in the mail his way, correct?
Agreed.
And thank you, everyone, for playing along at home. We will do this again. You know, we ought to do it for the regional season because that's a really long, you know, drawn-out thing, and we could, you know, give updates along the way. That would be kind of interesting.
That would be cool. Have it be. I was thinking about that last year, about this year, so maybe this year we should do it for next year. I do like the idea of the standings changing as we go forward.
Yeah, we can have updates. That'd be awesome. And if someone could think of a good way to incorporate first edition, let us know, because there's been some suggestions, and I can't see any of them working so far, but yeah. I'd like to roll that in somehow.
I thought about that this year, and it was just...
I mean, we could throw it in as just another four or five affiliations that...
I bid 100 on Voyager, or you know, on Delta Quadrant. We would all spend 50 on, you know, Vidian and Voyager and Herogen, and that would be it.
I don't know. I mean,
I'll bid because... 10 on non-aligned.
Yeah,
and Enterprise E, because lots of people are playing, enjoying.
But you wouldn't get it. Would be like the deck builder. It would show Federation. So if you Federation would probably be a pretty good pick because it'd be Enterprise E and the Delta Quadrant Feds. Yeah. But you know, it would also be movie feds and TOS feds. You know, who knows? It might be interesting. You'd have to balance it out because there's also a lot less victory points up for grabs overall in 1E than there is in 2nd edition.
True.
Borg would be a big pick, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Bigger than this time. All right. Well, again, if you got any suggestions, you can either post them to the board in the draft thread or send them to section31@danhammond.com. We have anything else to share? I think we're a long time between sets. I don't think we've seen any spoilers come through our desk in quite a while.
I haven't not seen any card spoilers, but I could give you an achievement spoiler.
Well, how on earth would you have gotten your hands on something like that?
I don't know. I had to hack into this spreadsheet that I found somewhere that I don't know where it came from.
All right. Well,
and things
since,
are.
Yeah, I was kind of, you know, I can't figure that. But what are we expecting, a new swath of stuff, or is this just a one-off, or what do we got?
No, there will be a full-on, I don't know, expansion, a whole new wave of achievements. Coming in, we've been seeing still lots of achievements. Got lots of great feedback at Worlds, at Gen Con. People just generally enjoying it. Some more specific. It was really entertaining to just be, you know, within two or three people down the table of earshot, people, and you know, very loud to go, "Oh, you know what would be a great achievement?" Or, you know, "I just did this really cool thing. That should totally be an achievement." But so it sounds like people are really enjoying that as, you know, something, an additional facet of the game. And so I know I certainly am. Coming up, certainly before the end of the summer, I would even say
the end of the summer
in another couple of weeks.
Okay.
We will have the full expansion, but in the meantime, I can give you,
how do you give a spoiler for an achievement?
Well,
I mean,
I don't know. I can just tell you what it is. I mean, it's you know, it's not coming out until, it's not going to be effective until the new release is out, but.
So if I went out, say it's play with only cards that have a P as the first letter. If I went out and played an AWPA card deck this week, I wouldn't get the achievement because it's not active yet. Is that what you're
That's
saying?
Correct. So it's a it's a spoiler in as much as that these are not active yet, but they will be when they come up. And in general, things are not retroactive because it's just too much of a headache.
Okay.
So if you've played something that is suddenly a an achievement, and you're bummed because you didn't get it again, look at it this way. Now you get to go back and play that very fun deck again.
And you probably know how to play it a little better.
Exactly. There are a handful of achievements that will be retroactive, just because it felt like they were matched with... they're the other half of a matched pair that kind of got just left behind in the original set. And those will be... their winning achievements to go with the playing achievements for triple trouble and double trouble. Oh. What are they called?
Are those the multiple headquarters?
Yeah, the two headquarters and the three headquarters achievements will now have matching win achievements, because those are fun. And I don't know why they didn't have them to begin with. And I asked, and they said, yeah, probably should have had that to begin with. There will be a cycle of dilemma-related achievements. So perhaps people will actually put dilemmas in their deck builder.
I see.
That's not the only reason, but I know I certainly play the same dilemma pile fairly regularly, so that might help. In the same way that the original release encouraged people to play different draw decks, different affiliations they might not have played before, this will encourage people like me to go out and, you know, not bring the same pile every week and try something new and exciting that is not the same old thing every week. Here is my favorite I actually put this on my application when they said, what would you make as an achievement if you were achievements master? So I did. It's called Diverse Unity. Play a second edition tournament. That's the wrong one. No, this is called Common Ground. Diverse Unity is something else. Common Ground is play in a 2E tournament with no duplicate species in your deck.
What?
So...
What? All right, so I'm playing TNG non-aligned.
Yeah, you probably have to play some kind of Federation non-aligned. Hey, I went 3-1 with my all different species deck back in the day. That was an old objective that we had back when
did
Special Rifts objectives. It was not your deck couldn't contain them, but it was solve a mission with all different species. And I just took it the extra mile because then I knew I wouldn't. I knew if I didn't, I would do that stupid thing and forget somebody was human or half-human or whatever and then end up failing. So I just made my deck all different species.
All right.
The best part about that is struggling over who your human is going to be.
Right. I guess DS9 is a good choice.
DS9 is a good choice. They have a lot of diversity. You could even do...
Solving Risa?
Yeah, you could do that.
All right.
So, and there's also a win pair to go with that. So play in a tournament, win in a tournament with a deck.
So I'm not to do this until a certain date, which is a release, because if I do, I don't get credit for it, especially if I win, and then I don't win later, I will be sad.
Correct.
All right, so spring it
don't,
later.
Don't Very do good. This is not a hidden achievement, so don't do it until you see it on the achievements list on the website.
All right, well...
And before I get all the Mako emails, not all achievements are created equal, and they're not all meant to be equally easy and or difficult to achieve. So
if it's
challenging, that's the idea. It should be fun.
If different achievements are different level of challenge, you think they'd be worth different amount of points?
That's an interesting point. It does seem that they are all currently worth 10. That does seem like something that could change.
All right. I won't ask any more questions.
Anyway, so there's a spoiler. It's not as exciting as a card spoiler, I know, but hopefully a few achievement fans will enjoy it.
Very good. With that, then, shall we wrap up the show?
I think so. I want to thank Chris for giving us the breakdown and the estimated retail value for each of our affiliations for the old Latinum draft, and Charlie and Brad for coming in and doing that with us. TK for putting the show together as always, and Warp 11 for their music. I am Sir Rogue.
And I'm Sir Dan.
And as always, I will remind you all to expand your power in the universe.
And I will score 120 points so that no matter what you've got, I can still win to end.
What about my
Phoenix? That counts the Phoenix.
My
and the
temporal incursion. Causal incursion.
Yeah, the casual recursion. I counted those two things. 120. We're good.
You're a double agent, but they know. And you'll be double-crossed by the double O. You cannot run, you cannot hide, and you cannot defect. They are always watching you, but you cannot detect. Section 31. Section 31. Section 31.